Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Denise, and this is the Dr. Denise Show. This is the Embrace Your Neurostyle and Beyond series. And I am so excited to have Tiffany Werner here today. Tiffany, how are you?
Hi, Dr. Denise. Thank you so much for having me. I'm great. Excited to be here.
Oh, my goodness. So first of all, everyone, my voice is just, I get so excited when I get to sit down and do a show and meet someone. And I've met Tiffany, but I like to, right before I go into a show, it's like, I'm like, dun, 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 meeting Tiffany, dun, 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 avatars, dun, dun. So I get so excited. So everyone, Tiffany is a licensed mental health counselor, 20 years of experience, and she is such a mental health warrior. She has been devoting her passion for reducing stigma, breaking barriers, new conversations by doing radio shows for 7 years and on multiple podcast platforms, award-winning shows. And you just do it because you feel like this is what you want to do. So welcome and thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. This is an honor.
Great. So maybe what's kind of fun is, can you maybe take us through a little bit about the essence of who you are as Tiffany? Like, if you want to start back as like a child, or like, how did you decide to go into licensed clinical, you know, being a mental health therapist? Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting one, I guess. Okay, so let's go back. I was raised in a really healthy family and very loved. And my parents loved each other very much and married 25 years.
Cheers. Cheers. What are your parents' names?
Jim and Suzanne.
Shout out to Jim and Suzanne.
So I was a pretty good kid in high school and cheerleading, gymnastics, things like that. And graduated high school and was accepted into many colleges and decided to stay home just for the summer before going into college and go to a nearby college just for summer classes. I kind of didn't even want to leave home. I just had it.
Where did you grow up?
In Florida. Clearwater. So getting ready for school one time in the morning, got up early and woke up earlier than usual, which is weird for me because I'm usually not a morning person and habitually late by accident. Anyway, got up and found my mother on the bathroom floor, and she had had a brain aneurysm, and I found her, and we had to call 911, and she never woke up. Oh, and that,
how old were you? Traumatized.
I was barely 18, just graduated high school.
So sending so much love to your mom and the energy and the spirit of her, and just you going back to, and just feeling the feelings of when you were right there at almost 18.
Yeah, so that changed me. The backstory is my father is a Marine, once a Marine, always a Marine. And he and my uncle, which was my mom's brother, were best friends in Vietnam in the Marine Corps. And when I say they fought in the Marines, my father had 3 Purple Hearts. He couldn't even open his hand fully because of grenade shrapnel. And a lot of post-traumatic stress, PTSD, alcohol drinking. I remember as a little kid, I wasn't allowed to sleep in the room with my parents because he was afraid, or he would go to the couch afraid of strangling me in the middle of the night or me catching him off guard or anything like that.
Because of the severity of his trauma and PTSD, right, from serving.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And back then, mental health was not like it is today, even though we have a long way to go, right?
Yes.
So I was grown up around that. But so anyway, they served and they were on some sort of deployment in Spain. And at the time, my mother was a Delta Airlines stewardess. before then, when they were called stewardesses and not flight attendants, you know. My mother, everyone always said she looked like a movie star. Mm-hmm. She's really beautiful. Anyway, so she flew out to Spain to see her brother, and he brought his best friend, aka my father. They went to a bullfight, story has it. And my mother and father were so gaga over each other, they missed the matador killing the bull. Mm-hmm. So they, ergo, that's why I exist, as well as my brother. So basically, my father married his best friend's sister. And obviously, they both survived the Vietnam War. And so anyway, fast forwarding, after I had found my mom, I started to not be okay and kind of become an at-risk youth and lose myself. I was had developed control issues, eating disorder, 98 pounds, dripping wet, and just completely not myself. And
were you getting any therapy at the time, or what were the times like?
Yeah, so shortly after my mom died, my grandmother, her mom died because I think out of depression of losing her daughter. And then the grandmother, my mother, my father's mom, my grandmother lived with us her whole life, and she passed away from cancer just the year after. And I was just losing it. I was in college. So I had moved away to Gainesville to go to the University of Florida by that time, just because it was too much. But before that, I had asked my father for help. I said, I'm not okay. Something's going on. I'm just not myself. And he said, you're going to be okay. You're not crazy. You can get through this. And that was the introduction, my first introduction to the stigma on mental health. Where
but you're not crazy.
Right. Okay. So he...
Can we pause? I feel like it's very important. You know, one of the things I'm passionate about, and I know you are too, which is why I invited you to this specific series, and I know I'm going to be fortunate to be on your show again, is even that word crazy. When we hear the word crazy, you know, words carry a vibrational frequency. And so I know that through the shows you've done, you've been so passionate about changing the stigma. And that's why the word neurostyle, you know, that we all process and perceive things. It's just a different word that we'll talk a little bit more about. But the fact that you said, and I'm putting this in quotes, you're not crazy. I think that's such a pivotal way to start this more shame busters part of what we're talking about.
Right. Okay. So that's just the beginning. That was the first time. Exactly. You're not crazy. It's basically telling me it's not okay to be not okay. Like, just get over it, kind of.
Correct. And, like, suck it up, buttercup.
Right.
Especially
right.
Marines. Like, go Marine. I mean, and by the way, in order to fight for our country, and, you know, I want to also give a shout out to all the different neurostyles on the planet that, you know, people have different ways that they cope. I know when surgeons, and sometimes people have to distance themselves from problems. So I'm not saying that. I just want to also kind of hold sacred space for your dad at that moment in time. He was like, wait, this is my daughter. She's going to be okay. And his verbiage or his ways of viewing things were that in that moment. Right. And so I just also want to have like almost like compassion for sometimes when people use words that aren't the most healing, because they might not even be aware that they're not being healing, or that they could be even, it could come across offensive. Sometimes people aren't even aware.
Mm-hmm. Which also at the time probably made me, now looking back, made me feel like there was something wrong with me for not being able to handle it or having such a hard time with it. But he was grieving in his own way too, and self-medicating with alcohol. So I felt like I lost two parents at the same time when he said that. And,
by the way, I call that a living loss. So there's different ways we have living losses where people can't be emotionally present. Sometimes we're estranged. So it's like sometimes it's even a harder loss because they're physically here on earth, but they're suffering in some way, or there's a conflict. So that's incredibly painful. So you lost both your mom and your dad for, you know, emotionally you lost your dad at that time.
Mm-hmm. So then Yes, that's how I felt. And so I go to the University of Florida, which is an amazing school. And that's when I lost both of my grandparents while I was in college. And then I graduated and attended grad school. And that's when my father passed from Agent Orange. And Agent Orange is that chemical that they sprayed over the soldiers in Vietnam to kill the weeds so they could see they're fighting. My father said that he remembers them putting a tarp over them, but it still sprayed up. And it was like cancer, a helmet where he had it all through his lymph nodes and behind his brain and things like that. So he passed away in 2001 while I was in graduate school. And at the time, I was in a class where it was group therapy, where we were being trained to not only run a group, but we were the group. And I remember that the professor was like, said something upcoming, like, Tiffany, I was obviously exhausted. I had just come back from his funeral. And he said, Tiffany, you look pathetic. Are you okay? And I was like, just tired. And he goes,
how old were you? When your father passed?
Early 20s. And he said, how does it feel to be an orphan? And I said, huh? Like, first of all, I thought orphans are people that didn't know who their parents were, not just lost both. So it's another stigmatized thing where I was like, no, I'm a survivor. I'm not a victim here. And later he apologized because I think he must have heard from other classmates that it was inappropriate to say that or something like that. However, that's another stigma where I was determined not to be that victim because I didn't see myself like that. I was raised in a healthy family and I was going through trauma and grief, but that's when I decided also to pull myself together. And I was overworking and focused in school and honor society and everything. In fact, when I was a junior, I was an undecided major because I couldn't decide exactly what I wanted to do. And kind of backtracking a second, but I went to the guidance counselor because I had to pick a major. And she said, this is bachelor's degree at the university. And she's like, well, you've got enough credits to.
Tiffany, can I do a sacred pause just pause for one moment? I will pause for one moment. Let me. Okay, I want to be very, very respectful to you, Tiffany. You are sharing such heartfelt information, and you and I are both on the front lines, and I just had a crisis. So I had to pause, take a deep breath. So it might even be helpful. I think this is also part of, when everyone's realizing how we process and perceive things, we're living in a world where we might get a text or we might be in the middle of an interview and there might be an emergency. So if you could just kind of do a little summary of what you were just talking about, the person is everything's okay to keep doing the interview. So thank you for being so gracious with that pause.
No, it's completely okay. It's what we do.
It is what we do. So you were talking about being in the honor society.
Right. So I was going to the guidance counselor to figure out what I should study. And she said, you have enough credits to get a minor in either sociology or psychology. And she's like, obviously you know what you want to do. You just don't realize it. And it occurred to me, maybe that's why I was taking all those classes, was to learn about something like that, because I was trying to maybe learn about me. And so I have a minor in sociology and I went with psychology. Anyway, that was just something.
No, that's wonderful. I think it's actually really important that when we, first of all, I want to say I'm so sorry about the loss of your mom and your dad, and the fact that you then went sort of like a call going into our suffering. There's series for all of us in life that are series of crisis, stabilization, and thrives. And it sounds like you were processing your grief in such an elevated way by like understanding it more. It doesn't mean it wasn't painful. But I know sometimes when we get a call, like we get into like a robot version of ourselves where we're just achieving and achieving. And sometimes, you know, especially you mentioned that at one point you were like at the 98 pounds and you were struggling with some nutrition challenges. Sometimes when we've had trauma, it's hard to be integrated in a holistic way into our body. So maybe can you relate to any of that in your kind of evolution of going from crisis to your thrive?
Right. So I believe that now I know it was my need for control because I felt like my life was going out of control. And one thing that a lot of people develop eating disorders because it's the one thing you can control. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And
absolutely,
restricting on purpose, just loss of appetite, sleep disturbance, things like that. Probably undiagnosed depression at the time. And I was in crisis, but grief and not being able to grieve because it was one trauma after the next, after the next, after the next. So it was one of them, trying to process one of them, another and another happened. And so it took me a while. And then so after I'm in graduate school, I went to a really great school, Palm Beach Atlantic University, and they forced us, a part of our curriculum, not forced, but to attend counseling and to make sure that we had our ducks in a row in our head, that, you know, we had processed any unresolved things so that we wouldn't go out and be the blind leading the blind, so to speak. And so during that, it took me about, and I had tried counseling a couple times, but I never found the right one. And I think I went through about 8 or 9 before I finally found one during that time that really resonated with me. I could open up to, and I trusted, and I just had an emotional breakthrough and just told her everything and realized at that time that not only did I have to forgive myself, first of all, I had to forgive my parents, like everything, for dying. And it's weird that you have to do that, but it was in how I handled it myself, where she's being aware of how we feel, that maybe that I felt like I was handling it the wrong way or any of that, and that it's okay to not be okay, and that I was actually validated in my feelings for the first time was groundbreaking emotionally. And that's part two, where I felt there is a stigma in that there shouldn't be when I realized it myself.
So can I just, I need to interject here. So I think it's really important that people realize that if they're suffering emotionally, that it can take, you've unpacked so much. I just want to make sure we honor what you've unpacked, is that when you go to seek help, there's not always a resonance, a heart and mind resonance right away. So first of all, good for you for being persistent and resilient. I know a lot of people that come to see me are like, oh my gosh, I almost didn't even come see you because I'm so frustrated with da 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 da. So I think people, I even tell people that when I'm doing my intakes on the phone, seeing if I'm the right fit. I said, mm-hmm. It's so important that you get the right fit, and there's therapeutic alliance. So congratulations on finding such a great person. And then also, I love what you said about it's okay to not be okay. And that's where like that whole elevation of stigma busting and shame busting is something that you're such a champion of.
Well, yeah. And thank you for saying that. I'm just agreeing that it's okay to not be okay. And it's the same with me when I get a client that wants to see if they can schedule an appointment. I want to make sure I'm the right fit for them too.
Right.
It works both ways. And so it's important to not give up on the first counselor because not everyone fits the right way. Some people want someone to just listen and vent to and not resolve a problem. Some people want people, you know, different styles of therapy. So kind of like the same with substance abuse and everything, that's why there's so many types of therapy, because there's not just one solution for everyone. Everyone needs something different. And, so to not give up when you feel like it's not the right fit, because that means you're giving up on yourself. They say, how many therapists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is one, but the light bulb has to want to change. So anyway, so I worked in correctional facilities for juveniles, residential, maximum risk, level 10, really wanting to work with at-risk youth, and did that for years, became a clinical director, everything, and licensed and worked with families and several different areas of mental health. And then eventually went into private practice. And I was a therapist in a very well-known and honorable psychiatric doctor's office, where most of them were psychiatrists or nurse practitioners, and there was three licensed mental health counselors, and I was one of them, so they referred in-house and everything. And I just so happened to have this office with an extra door, like the, you know, emergency exit, but you could just go in and out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my clients would come in, and in the lobby, there were some severely mental health people with case managers that they couldn't function by themselves or anything like that. And a lot of my clients were kind of intimidated by that and would come in and say, I don't know why I'm here. My mom's wants me to see somebody, but I'm not crazy, quote unquote, mm-hmm. There's that word again. And or coming in for couples counseling or things like that, but not needing medication management or whatever. And they were asking just to leave out the side door, saying, you know, I already made my next appointment up front. Can I just go out the door? Because they were ashamed to be seen in the lobby. And I was introduced that the stigma again, where why were people afraid to seek help because of that? So after I worked there for 4 years, I had asked them if I could just go down the street, open a counseling center, and I would not be competitive because I had signed a clause to not take my clients with me if I left, you know. But after 4 years, they welcomed me too, and because I wasn't going to compete with medication, I still to this day refer people to them for medication management if needed. But I wanted to open Safety Harbor Behavioral Health and Counseling Center so that there was no receptionist, there is no lobby, it's a kind of spa-like atmosphere. You get a bottle of water, coffee, more of a comfort living room kind of environment rather than a
clinical setting. So if you and I are on opposite ends of the country, and I have an office, well, I'm doing all telehealth right now, but my offices look like living rooms, and I don't share. I'm really blessed to not share any office space with anyone. I have someone that sublets on the days I'm not there. So, and you know, I don't want to be, you know, there are different ways people practice, and it's people do have shared waiting rooms, and that can work. But it sounds like your resonance for what you wanted to create, the sacred space for your clients, as do I, is like, it's really private. It sort of sets the tone. Because it's already oftentimes when we're talking about like loving yourself and getting help, you know, sometimes it's already enough just to schedule the appointment. Then you're like, oh my goodness, who, people are like, who might I run into? You know, people are getting better with stigma, but people still want that level of privacy and also calmness before they get ready to go and talk about their inner world.
Mm-hmm. Well, my counseling center at first had 9 offices. I downsized to 3. But most of the time, the therapists that the other 2 therapists, we have different schedules. So it's not even about that. Even if they run into someone, it's one person. And since we don't do medication management or whatever, it's, just different and rare that they run into anyone else. It's not like because with the doctor's office, there were 13 medication providers in there, plus 3. So the waiting room had 15 people in it, you know, rather than possibly running into it 1. Anyway, the stigma has been reduced. And it was right around the time like that all of a sudden mental health was becoming more accepted.
Yes. I mean, thanks to people like Lady Gaga, you know, Prince William. I mean, we've had Demi Lovato. I mean, and just mm-hmm. Oprah, Deepak. I mean, we have, it's became, it's and then right now, during the pandemic. I mean, things have really shifted. So you started, are you talking about, is this 7 years ago when you were starting like the globe, your global presence, or was this even before that you're alluding to?
Well, like 2010 is when I started private practice, and 2014 is when I opened the counseling center. So when I first opened the counseling center, I joined the Chamber of Commerce, and they had a grand opening, and there's like about 70 people there, and a ribbon cutting, and they asked me to give a speech. And I gave a speech, and I had a weird sense of humor, you know, but Tantalk Radio was there. And mm-hmm. after I gave the speech, they asked if I would host a psychology show on their radio station. And
I love that spontaneity. You never know what's going to happen when you walk out your door.
Right. Who would give a therapist a microphone without some training? It was ridiculous. I've hit like almost 600 episodes right now, but the first year it was so weird. It's embarrassing for me to go back and listen to be honest.
Oh, but that's also really wonderful to embrace, because we all have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. So what they wanted was for me to be online and for people to be able to just call in with questions, kind of like on Frasier or what you're
using. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But nobody was calling in. And at first it was like Wednesday nights at 8 p.m., which competed at the time with American Idol when it was big. And this is 7 years ago. And so then I started asking people to call in, like to my clients, hey, call in with a problem or something. It's like, nobody's calling. It was like crickets and me just having to just blab about mm-hmm. something. And so then I started coming up with the idea of guests, because, you know, where we could have callers call in, but someone sharing their story. And the ergo Moments of Clarity with Tiffany began, and it's the radio show, and it's moved up to Thursdays and Fridays live, from 12 to 1, but inspirational stories from exceptional guests that have a story of hope and how they've overcome something, from, you know, professionals like yourself to celebrities to musicians to authors to other advocates to comedians, anything. So many, a variety of people that are standing up to end the stigma on mental health and say that it's, you know, they've overcome things, veterans, survivors of all sorts. And mental health.
So I want to give a shout out to Kirkpatrick Miller, because the reason why I believe I met you, I'm pretty sure it was through social media, but through you and Kirk have done some shows. And it's so fun when you meet other mental health warriors, right?
Mm-hmm. I love Kirk.
What'd you say?
I love Kirk. Is it my family?
Yeah. So can we talk just a minute? Because I know it sounds like you and I are kindred spirits about, like, there are no limits to who we can interview and who can inspire us.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go deeper on the power of language, though, and like the words disorder, illness, wellness? And I want to then give a little bit of I don't know if you had a chance to listen to anything about NeuroStyle, but I want to make sure you and I have like a deep dive, because you have so much clinical experience, as do I. And then also talking to people. So can you just comment on some of maybe either an inspiring story or ways you've seen people get out of their own way and not have shame, or anything you want to say on the power of words and how what we say to ourselves to have the courage, if we're having any mental health challenges, to get some help?
Well, I think it's wanting to be strengthened in the mind and to not have the shame. An inspirational story. I published a book called There's a Light Within You That Never Goes Out. And actual stories of abuse survivors, of adult survivors of sexual abuse and incest. And the reason I wrote that was because at the time I just had a bunch of clients, a slew of clients come in all of a sudden, similar stories, and I wanted to stay on my A game and do my research and purchase some curriculum, and I couldn't really find any, but that they approved of, because a lot of it had a lot of scripture and things like that. But as I was counseling them, they decided we had a survivor group, and instead of charging for the group, they allowed me to use their work and curriculum that and assignments we came up with what was working. They helped me, I helped them as the same thing. And watching them talk about it over and over and let go of the shame and guilt, and especially even on the radio when someone shares their story to others without feeling judged or anything. Undeserved shame, undeserved guilt is the hardest thing to rid ourselves of, but the most powering when you do.
Yes. And
that's when people transform, because they understand that it's not their fault. And it doesn't even have to be childhood sexual abuse, anything in our lives, from divorce or abuse or getting out of a narcissistic relationship or anything. So many things can lead to undeserved shame and guilt. And the one thing that I find that, in my opinion, that keeps people from coming into counseling is fear of the unknown, fear of commitment, fear of failure, fear of success, fear of abandonment, fear of, you name it, fear. Fear of being labeled, fear of not getting better, fear. And the only thing greater than fear, in my opinion, is hope and willingness to bet on ourselves and willingness to change and willingness to get over those things that cause us to be in the I can't world and the things that cause anxiety, fear. And anxiety is a learned behavior. We can have that underlying anxiety that we're just genetically given or whatever, or just having anxiety of any of those fears I just mentioned, and hope and willingness to bet on ourselves and accomplish a goal or get through things and actually make ourselves uncomfortable, but on purpose to feel accomplished and successful and everything, can rid that anxiety. But if we brush things under the rug and run from things, like things that can be handled through talking about it in therapy, then anxiety can control us and get worse. And that fear can cause it to turn into phobias and avoidance and basically not reaching our full potential in life. And that's a shame, to not reach our full potential in life from fear of not betting on ourselves and feeling like we can count on ourselves or believe in ourselves, and from just what's in our head.
Right. So I'm listening carefully to everything, and I'm thinking about that comment of you're not crazy. And so, you know, words themselves can either have a neutrality or a judgment. And so I find that, you know, even the words neurotypical versus neurodiverse, I think it's incredible from a scientific standpoint as a Western medicine trained doctor, but I'm a holistic understanding of the universe and so much more vast than just those words. And so when I was reading the book, Neurotribes, I had an aha moment at like 3 a.m. I'm like, why not neurostyle? And that we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. And that's the fabulous five of biological, psychological, social, cultural, and spiritual. And then the sixth, the sixth sense, you know, the energy vibration. And so to me, I think even when you and I are talking, we have just one snippet. Like if you were to just grab one sentence during the show or one sentence of mine, there's so much more energy around the power of our words, thoughts, and actions. And when you were saying fear, you know, I love like that kind of like crisis stabilization thrive, like fear into hope, you know, hate into love. And that transformation, though, of going through that feeling state that you went through, if we take it back to you being vulnerable and sharing, you know, the loss of your mom and then the loss of your dad, you took the energy of all your feelings and you went on your own unique path to reach your thrive. And then you kind of landed in the most highest way I think we can process our own grief or loss, when we take it from you know, awareness to self-love to that altruism where we want to serve. You know, we want to, of course, still put our own oxygen mask on ourselves and have self-love, mm-hmm. but then to do these incredible shows. And I don't know about you, but don't you get so inspired when you interview people? Aren't you like, oh my goodness, isn't this the coolest thing ever to hear someone mm-hmm. else's story? I mean, I'm always so humbled.
Me too. I mean, the guest makes the show, to be honest. And not only that, I think mean, I gain so much awareness, humility, inspiration from hearing other people that have overcome things like genocide and horrific things that they're standing and surviving, not victimizing themselves. And that's a neuroscience as well. Survival versus victim mentality. Getting out of that, I can't, I should have, I, why me mentality will stop us from feeling like a survivor. And when I told you that that professor asked how it felt to be an orphan, that's when I knocked in myself. I mean, I never saw it like that, but I think that was a real striking point for my brain, my way of thinking, going, I'm not an orphan. I'm not a victim here. And the way I look at it in hindsight now, that could have been the push I needed to like make sure that I was going to be okay. Because I was like, oh crap, maybe I am on my own. Like I got to get my crap together. But I never.
But that's the let it just pause. I just want to pause. That's like a huge aha moment.
Right.
That's like aha, aha, aha. The word mm-hmm. the orphan. I mean, I'm getting chills. Like you were, I can feel. I mean, I'm sure you had so many feelings when that happened, but then you in that moment, you had those feelings, but you were like, this is how I'm going to live. It doesn't, you're like, damn. Like, you're like, I can already picture you with almost like a Viking hat on and braids. Like, dun, dun, dun. Like, no, you're not going to tell me that. And so
the funny part is, Dr. Denise, is that part of our assignment after every class is we had to email him our feedback.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I said, I think that some of the other classmates said something because my email and my feedback was like, how dare you? Like, I just went off in a respectful manner, but how dare you? Like, I'm not. And that was my punch back, like in a way, like, for myself, not towards him.
Isn't that cool though? Like everyone has such a unique role in our lives. So it's like, ha ha, those words have now inspired me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? Right?
It's not what happens to us that defines our character. It's how we react to it.
Absolutely.
And I think honestly, and don't get me wrong, I love my parents and I've missed them. And my mother died at the age of myself, but 25 years ago. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I just celebrated the 20th anniversary, September 22nd of my father passing.
Oh,
yeah. So it's been a while. So I've had time to get to, you know, through the grief and loss, but you know, there's 5 stages of grief and loss, so from denial, bargaining, anger, depression, and then acceptance. And we can go up and down in those 5 stages, but I've been in acceptance, but every now and then you can get depressed or have memories or whatnot. But at first I think I was in the anger phase for a while. I was an angry young teen and young adult. And then that's where I think it helped me at the time, push forward, but at the same time, self-destruct. And that's why I've been very passionate to help people and the stigma, because therapy was so powerful for me to forgive myself for how I first of all reacted to it. Second of all, that I was angry about it. Third of all, that it wasn't my fault or theirs. Things like that, you know, that people don't resonate logically when you're thinking with emotion. So it's in hindsight now, I wouldn't change anything, because everything that's happened to me up until this point has made me who I am today and caused me to help so many people through what happened to me. Because if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't probably be a therapist. No. I probably wouldn't publish a book and help survivors of sexual abuse. I wouldn't have a radio show that helps other people. I wouldn't be so passionate if I didn't go through such severe trauma. I wouldn't be this passionate. And no, I'm proud of what I'm doing, and I won't ever stop
I'm smiling right now, just so you know.
I want to help people.
I want to go to lunch with you.
Definitely.
But I want to actually just really be in the moment of you and your vulnerability and your transparency, but also your inspiration. And the other thing I thought we might do to give people some tips and tools, since you and I are on the front lines and we're talking about shame in this episode, and you shared your kind of, you know, evolution to your thrive and helping so many. Why don't we, is it okay if we just take a little bit of time to talk about maybe some of the things you say to people when they walk in your office, and I can do the same about maybe when they are having shame about picking up that phone the first time, or how they're seeing themselves, or how to talk to their friends or family if they get a diagnosis. I think it might be great if we could give some tools. I'd love to hear you start and I can chime in, because I think, you know, we're really fortunate because we're on the front lines and we do this. But if you're naive and you've never gotten help, you know, there's a lot of steps sometimes to get out of the way of making that first call. And then even when you maybe get the diagnosis, how to think of yourself differently. I'd love to just chat with you about that.
Yeah, well, when you ask that question, there's something else I do. I'm a consultant for a local police department. Mm-hmm. And I am their kind of go-to therapist that they can trust. And a lot of them have. And I get these, I just say to bypass my wait list, just text me. And most of those texts are, I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done this before. How do we go about it? And my response right away, because, you know, with a lot of veterans, police, and other people, they think that they signed up for this, that there should be no reason that they need help, and that this is what I signed up for. I, you know, should be able to put up with it kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And there's other stuff. Like they don't believe in counseling, or a lot of them, not everyone, but it's kind of a hard nut to crack, kind of, you know, like they have a guard up, so to speak. And I commend them right away and say, I know how hard it is for you, how hard this was for you to even text me. And don't worry about this. This is all completely confidential. And this is just between you and me. And I explain what therapy is. And I congratulate them on picking up the phone and making that step forward and to reach out and know that it's, you know, life gets hard no matter what. And it also saves marriages, saves problems at home, saves people from suicide, depression, conflicts within the household, especially. And if they seek help, because a lot of times people bring their job home with them, and it brings problems into the house rather than, because we need a balanced life. If we have a hard job, we definitely need a peaceful home, you know, something like that.
So I want to just pause, because I like to break things. So I think when you're out there as a maybe new therapist, or if you're on the other side picking up the phone for the first time, it's so important that you create a safe space, which is what Tiffany's talking about. She's validating the reality that we all have a human experience, that no matter what profession we have, that we're allowed to have our feelings. So validating the feelings, and then giving tangible pluses to processing a tough emotional time, that then you can kind of in real time learn tools. So you can then, you know, as you enter your door, of course, you might tell your spouse, or let's say if you're a child and you want to tell a friend, you know, a problem you have, but you have a way of not holding on to that problem and hurting your own material DNA, your own spiritual health, and that you can then enjoy your family, enjoy your friends. And so what you're doing, it sounds like, Tiffany, is like very strategically kind of like right away taking away the shame and saying it is okay. I'm going to just say it's okay not to be okay. Mm-hmm. Right? I know. I love it. And then can we talk, you know, when people come in to see me when I was in person, but I'm doing telehealth, you know, they're almost like relieved. I don't know if you've experienced that. Like when they came in, I don't know if what they thought I was going to look like. They're like, oh my gosh. I don't know if it's because I smile more than most doctors, but there's that feeling. I think when you're in the position of welcoming someone into your office and you're about to start a therapeutic relationship of any type, have it being warm, engaging, and really create a place of neutrality and warmth, I think is very important. And I think, I don't know about you, but when I, you know, as a doctor, you know, people are often relieved when they come to see you and they give you, you know, symptoms that they're having. And of course, in the MD costume that I have, I'm an adult and child integrative psychiatrist, they do walk out of there with a diagnosis. But I, this is something I'm very passionate about, and I know you are too. I talk with them like, well, you're John, and you know, you have these stylistic qualities about you. That's why I integrate the word neurostyle into talking. Like, this is what you're uniquely processing and perceiving the world. Now, some people might have a diagnosis or not. So that's another reason why I like that neurostyle, because, you know, diagnostic labels are for scientific validation to get more data on how we can elevate and do the best treatment for a given situation. But I like people to remember that they're not their symptoms, that they're not their diagnostic label, that kind of aha moment of feeling understood, oh, you're having depression or PTSD, it serves an amazing aha moment. But then depending on how much you want to be private or not, you can have your own way of processing that, reaching your own unique thrive, and then talking about it with different individuals, kind of knowing your audience. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and how you, I'm pretty sure we're similar, but I just love to hear your take on that.
Well, yeah, yes. Of course, I sometimes it's not so much the label, but don't we want to know how to handle a problem? So who cares about what the diagnosis is? It's what are the symptoms and how do we have a solution to cope with them? And if we go to the doctor and the doctor says we have high blood pressure, we want to know what medication we can take to lower it, or diabetes, people need insulin, or
what exercise, or what amount of not seeing that person, or what amount of food is medicine, or altruistic acts, or even job change, you know, switching careers, or even, I would say, even during the pandemic, wouldn't you say a lot of your clients and people are wanting to do more hybrid? They're wanting, even if the pandemic's getting better, people are realizing that maybe there's new ways of having less stress. Like, how can we be less stressed?
And having someone to vent to is very helpful. I mean, I have my own therapist that I see when needed. I think every healthy adult should. It's why not have a sounding board that isn't family or somebody that's going to worry about you and that you can just be completely transparent with and talk about whatever you want, and they're not going to tell anyone and not going to worry if you're okay or give a personal spin on it and anything like that. There's nothing wrong with that. And I personally want to know, like, when there's ADHD that runs in my family, I'm diagnosed with that as well as anxiety, and knowing the symptoms of that. And that's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So I have symptoms of being forgetful or not retaining things the right way, or being impulsive or things like that, and unintentionally. So knowing that when I can catch myself doing it and or explain to people, hey, I'm so sorry, I did not mean to interrupt you, or I'm just, or can you repeat yourself? I went to Tiffany Land or whatever, just because I drifted off. Someone could just be talking about going to the grocery store and all of a sudden I'm thinking of what I need to get to, and then I have to reground myself and focus.
And by the way, do you love protein? Does protein help you? My son looks at me, he's like, now, Mom, you need to go eat your protein.
I don't know.
He's like, he's so funny because we talk openly. My son, I've been using, he's like, now, Mom, you know I'm hyperactive, but you're really bringing neurostyle to the world. So he even has told me that he, like, even though he's at a school where someone came up to him and asked him, he's like, no, he proudly stated, I have ADHD. My son was like proud to state it, but he does like the neuro style. And he knows me, but he's like, now mom, are you forgetting something? Did you eat your protein? So like, it's nice too, when you can just like converse with your family members, right, Tiffany? Mm-hmm. Like, this is my style. Like, okay, I might be really, these are my avatar powers at this, but then I might forget this. And right. Kind of like embracing that, because you're so gifted and creative. And don't you say that? So you component. Think there's something cool. That's what I love about it. It's like,
that's what ADHD is. It's like, you're going to kind of be a social butterfly or whatever, but I can multitask, and I am entrepreneur of several things, and do a lot of things, and I just gotta, what, you know, I have had my whole life to work on patience.
Yes,
patience is a virtue, and it's one that I've had to work on for sure. But so I'm not ashamed to say that I have something like mental health as well, a disorder, anxiety, same thing, learning which things I'm fearful of, and making to-do lists, and making sure I'm mindful in my space, and taking one thing at a time, and not trying to overwhelm myself, and getting out of the what-if world. And
do you do positive self-talk? I'm like,
that's a big, huge thing.
Oh yeah. I just want to talk about that. So like, I was in the midst of doing something creative, and then I realized, let's even use the example. You're like, where's the link? And I was in the middle of a telehealth session. And then after I got off, I remember you told me, you had such insight to your neuro style. You're like, Denise, you should send it to me right before the show. And then I said to you, oh yeah, right? And so that's like a way that we can get to know each other. Like, and I don't know about you, but when I'm around my really close friends, sometimes we're so excited to talk with each other because we haven't seen each other. I'm like, okay, you guys, go first. Because if I start talking, sometimes I just talk so much and I never stop. And so I like even try to start conversations that way so people know that I have an awareness of, you know what I mean? Because my energy sometimes can be like, almost like, what is she on? And I'm like, not on anything. You know what I mean? Like, we were out to dinner the other night and I was like, oh my God, am I really popping my virginity? Am I really? I was like popping my like post, like my during the pandemic virginity of being at like a restaurant. And like, if I had like a little cartoon bubble, I'm like, dun, dun, dun. Why are we wearing a mask in? Then we take it off inside. Dun, dun, dun. Oh my God, we might all get COVID. Dun, dun, dun. This place is so loud. Why am I even here? Dun, dun, dun. I love the people. The food's great, but this is too loud. So like, even knowing your own style, like I talked to my friends afterwards, and my one dear friend's like, oh my God, Denise, that was like empath overload. It was like a really fun night, but I don't think I can do that for a month. You know what I mean? And so like, just being aware, like I always like imagine like my own, like I'm here with you and I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to meet her. We're across the country. I want to go to lunch with you. Like, that's what my mind's thinking. I'm like, okay, Denise, focus. You're on an interview.
You're in California. You, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I'm like, you guys will meet sometime. So anyways, I just want to, but see this playful way. And even my son, I haven't been formally diagnosed with OCD, but I like to use terms so he understands. And I think I mentioned this the other day. He's like, now mom, we know you will not enjoy this show we're going to watch unless you find your car keys. So can you? And so I'm like, oh, you're right. He's like, I'll help you, mom. And then he even throws in, it's your OCD. Now I'm not on any meds for OCD, but you know, we have styles. I would say my neuro style is a combination of some, like the right amount of ADHD. I haven't been on any meds for it, but I kind of know how to harness it. Then I think I have that like obsessive compulsive personality style, but I've mastered sort of that adaptive perfectionism. And yeah, I'm an empath, so I can feel people's feelings. Oftentimes I'm too caring for others. I'll put like their oxygen mask on before mine, right? And like, I've been sad at times when I like, so even talking about ourselves in like these qualitatively rich ways where we like, it's like we're proud of who we are. And I mean, wouldn't it be a super boring world if we were all the same?
Oh yeah, I said that before too. And I find you very interesting, and like, if everyone was the same, I would be miserable.
Right?
Some of my best friends are the ones that are just like this, where we can just be transparent. And that's so probably the biggest insult you could ever call me, is normal or average, I think. And I, it's just funny because, you know, when people are worried about mental health, we all have something. And you know that, like, even in the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic manual for mental health, there's a phase of life problem. Like, okay, so no one went through a problem in life or adjusting to a different job or whatever. I mean, we all have something. And the people that are afraid to admit that they have something or afraid of the label, I think that they're secretly worried they have something and they don't want to find out, or they have something so severe that it scares me and I don't, they're the ones that don't seek help because they're the ones like in, on death row, Ted Bundy or whatever.
Right, but I also just want to acknowledge that, you know, the Western cap of seeing things is one way. There's Eastern, there's spiritual integration, and there's qualitative. Like some people, you know, the DSM serves its purpose for some scientific language and agreement and scientific method and validity. But what I want to validate, well, how I'm interpreting what you're saying, is that we all have feelings and that we all go through emotionally tough times. And so right. then we get to choose how we
that define that.
So yeah, but I don't, I'm the opposite. Everyone knows I have the reputation as a doctor here. By the way, I grew up in the Midwest. I, you know, played sports. I was like a fun person, you know? So I have the reputation of being like the doctor that, oh my God, now will you prescribe if you need to? So I said, of course I will. So people know that I take a holistic approach, that I treat them as human beings, and that the labels are for help with treatment if need be. But then you don't land on that. You realize your own personal thrive. So mm-hmm. it's all a matter of what people want to acknowledge of their highest levels of understanding themselves and their own path. So that's the other thing that's kind of cool, is just realizing too, I don't know if you believe this, but I believe we're all our own best healers and that we have free will to make good, healthy choices, to surround ourselves with good people. We do have, some of us have more genetic predisposition. You know, I'm really blessed. My father did, I don't think you know this, but he got sober when I was 11. He almost died when I was in sixth grade. And so I have that kind of childhood experience of seeing my father, you know, really go to his own thrive in this lifetime. And I think it's helped shape me into being, you know, like taking the shame out of talking about mental health or family trouble. So I just want to like congratulate you for, well, I know you're already you and you just love like helping others, but I just want to say like, thank you for sharing your story, helping so many people. And it sounds like you're having fun along the way. So that's like, yay, like the cherry on top, right?
Right. I'm very blessed that I have a job I love that actually helps people. So when I work, and I tend to work a lot more than a lot of my friends tell me I need to slow down or take a break or
but you're whatever. Loving, but you're I'm your like, joy.
But when I take a break, I mean, I'm either playing catch with my kids or going to football games with them or whatever and doing that. I mean, I love my family time, but I don't feel like I'm working.
I agree. I don't feel like I'm working. Like, that's why I was so excited. I'm like, dun, dun, dun. I get to interview you. That's why I put a picture right up. My own neurostyle is like, oh, she's 5 to 7 minutes. I'm like, oh, I can post something cool about us.
Yeah, like, I'm like joyful. The only thing that sucks is progress notes and insurance claims, but other than that, we're good to go.
Exactly. So before.
But then there's electronic billing for that. So I don't know, but.
So no, I have a question for you on our way out of this lovely interview. And I know we're going to be working with each other in different ways.
Yes.
But there, I know you have so many quotes that are like some powerful quotes that you say that are very like, I know you've said some of them during the show, but do you want to part with any of the quotes or things that really inspire people to take the shame out of coming to see someone?
Well, I close my radio show every time where, be kind to yourself and a stranger because you never know what they're going through. And when we're working together, change can only come when we stand together as one.
Yay.
And there's no shame in seeking mental health. It's okay to not be okay. But there's always the light at the end of the tunnel. You don't have to be not okay forever. And that's with hope. And to seek help, because there's no shame in it. There's really no shame in seeking help, because when we brush things under the rug and everything, eventually that rug mound is going to get so big you're going to trip over it. Things will resurface if you don't deal with them.
Absolutely. So you just shared some amazing, like, your story, tips, tools. How can everyone find you and also your shows? I'm going to put the bio in the link, but it'll be great for people to hear how they can find you.
Well, Dr. Denise, first of all, I find you amazing. And I know you're doing the same thing with helping others and changing the world. And I'm so grateful to collaborate with you and know you and have you on the show coming up again. And I know that we met a long time ago, but like in 2017.
I'm smiling, by the way, as I'm hearing your voice say this. I'm like so grateful. I'm learning how to accept compliments.
I wish I could see you face to face right now. It'd be great. But
we can always FaceTime right as we hang up and say, hey. Right. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, but you can find me pretty much everywhere on social media, but probably the website, mocwithtiffany.com. It's M-O-C, like with Tiffany, like Moments of Clarity with Tiffany. mocwithtiffany.com is the website. It has all the links to my YouTube channel and the LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter. And the shows aired live every Thursday and Friday, 12 to 1 Eastern Standard Time. But then it's aired live on YouTube and eight Facebook channels and Twitter and LinkedIn Live virtually. And then about 8 or 9 FM and AM stations and syndicated in 2 states. And then the podcast.
I'm getting chills.
Pretty much everywhere, like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon. You can ask Siri or Alexa or Google Home, hey, Alexa, subscribe me to the Moments of Tiffany, Moments of Clarity with Tiffany podcast, and they will.
You got an inside route with Siri. You go, girl.
If you're the Siri, like, mine doesn't like it. It was just recently, I got to say, I'm pretty proud for People's Choice Podcast Awards. It made the final slate, meaning the top 10 out of 250,000 nominees in 3 different categories: best female podcast host, Grammar Girl education, and then health.
Yay! So
I didn't win the first place, but to make the top 10 in three different categories was amazing. No one else did that. So free.
And I'm so like, yay, I got to interview you here and reconnect with you. And I'm like so happy. Everyone, thank you for joining. I'm honored too. We're both honored. So thank you guys for listening. And also Tiffany rocks. She's like, loves everyone. So I know that she's like, you can't even imagine that she has time, but she will make time when you reach out to her, if you have a show or something you want to do. And I'm so excited to get to know you better, Tiffany. It's an honor. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me. And
thank you. I'm smiling. I'm already envisioning us having lunch and enjoying some time soon. Thanks, everyone.